This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
British Columbia's Extreme Weather Response Program enables communities to temporarily increase emergency shelter capacity during extreme weather conditions that threaten the safety and health of individuals and families who are homeless. The program funds time-limited temporary shelter beds that are needed during extreme weather conditions from approximately the 1st of November to March 31st. But the differences among the various types of homeless shelters in the province and the programs that fund them can create challenges for people who simply need shelter that they can depend on. We're joined in the studio by Wallace Millay. He's an artist and activist from Nanaimo who has been keeping a sharp eye on issues related to homeless people over the past few years, and by John Horn, the City of Nanaimo's social planner. Welcome back to People First Radio, both of you.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks, Kevin.
John Horn, maybe we'll start with you. Perhaps we could begin by asking you for a brief summary of the differences in terminology used to describe the various winter-related shelters and how that impacts on the situation in Nanaimo.
Sure, Kevin. The extreme weather shelter designates those nights when the temperatures and the conditions are such that they present a real threat to the life and safety of people on the street. So the extreme weather is meant really for events where the weather is extraordinary, cold and wet, whereas the winter shelter is really designated for those nights that are just regular winter nights in the Nanaimo-style weather. So it can be cold and wet, but it's not an extreme event. It's just a regular, typical winter night. So those are the two types, extreme and regular.
Do you find that people, and when I say people, I mean people in the service community as well as individuals who may need these types of housing, are they confused by the terminology? Do they understand what it really means?
I think people understand the terminology, extreme versus a regular wet winter night. I think there's probably some differing in what's the definition of extreme, because everyone has their own version of what's extreme weather versus what's regular weather. So I think the only confusion becomes, well, how do you define extreme weather? And that's where some of the difficulties lie.
Wallace Millay, you campaigned vigorously in past years for the creation of a winter shelter. That is a shelter that was open every night through the winter months in Nanaimo. You resurrected your campaign in the fall of 2012. What happened and why were you concerned?
Well, one of the reasons I started this campaign up in 2008 was that the arbitrary criteria for extreme shelter, I disagree with this, as do many others. The shelter the first few years was access with the majority of Aboriginals, which will not stay in the Salvation Army shelter, and for obvious reasons from the history of residential schools, etc. The shelter the first couple of years was open because of the criteria. The first year was we had all the snow. The second year it was open a total of 12 evenings following the criteria. So ourselves, we campaigned on this. It went over to a winter shelter 2 winters ago, and then late in the season, near the end of August, when proposals were being accepted by the city for dealing with people experiencing homelessness, that's when the community found out that there was not going to be a winter shelter this winter of 2012 and 13. I took a lot of onus to the reasons why behind it. I found the first few years the shelter was open, it was with respect and dignity towards those accessing the services. And I find by the way that it was brought back to an extreme weather shelter and the comments made by spokespersons for the Unitarian Fellowship and the coordinator that it was disrespectful. And part of what I try to promote is that the individuals we're trying to assist here are treated with respect.
Now, I spoke with Gord Fuller earlier in the week. He's also a community-based activist with a strong interest in housing homeless people in Nanaimo. He's been involved with the 710 Club for a number of years. 710 Club offers hot breakfasts and sandwiches to people who are hungry and need food. I began by asking him about his appearance in front of the Nanaimo City Council in late summer 2012.
Well, my concerns were we had heard that the Unitarian church group that runs the cold weather shelter was thinking about just going back to extreme weather. And we had heard this months before and tried to get in touch with someone, but no one was getting back to us. So I felt I had to go in front of council to see if they would be able to contact them. The concern was that with only extreme weather, we might have a death in the community if it was not open right from November through March. And the positive thing that came out of going to council was someone phoned us the next day. And they did apply for funding through monies that the Working Group on Homelessness had gotten from the RDN through VEHA. And so we knew that the money would be available for them to do cold weather. And they raised the criteria a bit on that to 5 degrees with rain and wet, which wasn't really good enough for me at the time. But what I didn't want to see was someone die on the streets of Nanaimo, because we had the capacity to keep it open, and it was chosen not to do so.
Now, what did you hear from people in the community, and particularly from or about people who would have needed shelter during the winter? What did you hear and observe during the winter that's drawing to a close now?
Well, one of the things that we knew would happen is with the opening of the supportive housing on Wesley, the number needing to access the cold weather shelter would drop. So this is part of my initial concerns that they wouldn't be doing it. We knew the numbers would be less, and it would have less of an impact on the Unitarian Church in maintaining that. Throughout the year, I did hear from a number of people that, yes, the numbers were down. They really like the non-judgmental attitude of the staff, and they were very appreciative of it being open all year. Now, up until about a month ago, I still had a worry that they were going to end up closing on days that didn't meet the need. But Kevin Griffith, who I've talked to throughout this process, he was coordinating it, mentioned that the Unitarians felt comfortable in doing it this year because of the less number, because it didn't have that much impact on them, and they were going to use the rest of the money to keep it open right through March. So that alleviated a lot of my concerns, and in talking with a number of the homeless communities, some of who I see on almost a daily basis, that alleviated their concerns. They knew that they had a place until the end of March. So, you know, between the Unitarians choosing to keep it open and the people using it, having that knowledge, that's helped extremely well. Now, all that being said, we did have 2 deaths in the community, actually 3, of some chronically homeless people. But the positive in that, if there is a positive at all about someone dying, is that those 3 people had housing when they passed away. They were in the Wesley Street shelter. And so in moving forward, what we need to do is ensure that the cold weather shelter stays operational for the next 2 years until our next 2 supportive housing complexes get up and running. Because that should really alleviate the need in this community for a cold weather, extreme weather shelter. That being said, and I don't advocate creating more shelters, I advocate for housing. I do believe we need a small, low barrier shelter that operates throughout the year. Because the Salvation Army shelter is great, but it is a high barrier shelter in that it will not take people if they are actively using or actively intoxicated. And we need something, but it does not have to be a large capacity facility. It needs to be kept small so that we don't become a draw for people from other communities and end up like Victoria and Vancouver with huge numbers of homeless on the streets.
John Horn, what are your thoughts on Gord Fuller's comments? That's the first question I have for you. And then the second question would be, what do the various reports about occupancy and use of the shelter at Unitarian Fellowship tell us?
Well, I agree with Gordon that the goal is not to have a proliferation of emergency shelters in the community, because it's not really much of a long-term solution. So one of the things I would say is that despite the concerns expressed by community members, last year out of 151 nights, I'm including this winter, we were open 143 of those nights. So there was only 8 nights in which the shelter was closed. So throughout the entire winter season, it essentially was open every night. And that was due to a mixture of cold, wet winter nights and extreme weather nights. And comprising those two together, we managed to completely stay open throughout the year. So I think that was the outcome that people were looking for, that there wasn't too many nights when there was no shelter option available at the Unitarian, and we achieved that outcome. My goal is to respect the autonomy and the any boundary setting that the Unitarian Church has. It's their program, it's their building, and it's their people who run it. So if they say we can do X, Y, and Z, then we support them in doing that, X, Y, and Z. So really, I think Gord's right on the money in a couple of realms there, and it's really about the willingness of the Unitarian Church to do the job, and this year they did just that.
Wallace Millay, what are your thoughts about what happened during the year based on what you've heard here and what you've heard in the community? Were homeless people in Nanaimo and the city itself, you might say, well served by the Unitarian Fellowship shelter?
When the doors are open, yes. We don't have to go back that far in history to see how it can unravel as far as following the criteria. That there was extra money there to have it open on the nights that didn't follow BC Housing's criteria. It was a blessing this year, and I'm very grateful that the Unitarian was there and that it was open as much as it was. But there was always that worry throughout the whole winter with those on the street and those of us that try to support them, that there was no guarantee what nights it would be open and what nights it would not be open, and no one needs to go through that unfairness. To get back to the shelter itself, I'm also for housing and support over shelters, but in the meantime, I thought it was agreed upon that the right thing to do until these facilities are up and running was to have a winter shelter. The numbers account for it. For Wesley Street alone, there's like 36 units, and there was 170 applicants for Wesley Street alone. There's only so many shelter beds in the community. Another good thing that's was done by BC Housing, and I believe John Howard picked it up this year, was rent subsidies, which is also a very beneficial thing and for people that are at risk of homelessness or getting out off the streets. What I'd like to see this year is not having to wait until the end of August to find out whether or not we're going to be extreme weather shelter or winter shelter. I'd like to see the city, the Unitarian Fellowship, the Working Group on Homelessness, and others get together and come to a decision on how it will be available for next year. I don't believe that any organization should be able to dictate to the rest of the community how we treat the homeless. So those that are not willing to step up to the plate, then that's okay. I respect that. But it's already been decided that the benefits of a winter shelter. And when it comes to compassion, affordability, John and I imagine many others know that it's more beneficial to taxpayers to have people housed than to have them homeless. So.
I received an email, a couple of emails on our discussion today or about our discussion today after the People First Radio e-newsletter went out to our list by email yesterday. Here's what one listener wrote. The Unitarian Fellowship got into this project because people with big hearts wanted to provide emergency aid, not permanent shelter. It's not fair to put pressure on them to turn their facility over completely to the shelter needs of our homeless. That's the job of our elected and appointed officials. What are your thoughts on this, John Horn?
Well, I guess part of that question comes right back down to the issue of consumer choice. So I think it's important that when we provide social services, just the way we provide retail services and commercial services, that consumers have some choice so they can shape and support those services. So in this case, people do have a choice when the Unitarian shelter is open. They can choose to go right there rather than to the other two shelters that are permanent, full-time, 365-day-a-year shelters. And that's good that consumer choice is in place. I guess the question is, what's the value that's placed on that? In other words, if the Salvation Army is empty, is it the case that we absolutely have to fund an emergency weather shelter because some individuals choose not to go to the Salvation Army? I don't have an answer to that question. At the moment, what we're doing is funding the emergency shelter, and so the consumer choice is there. But I guess that's part of the issue is, okay, well, how much choice is really important to have, and how much is a must, and how much is a good to have, but not necessary. We could probably debate that quite a long time, but that's some of this comes down to the choice of people, which shelter they want to go to, and how much we should put into making that an option for them.
And Wallace Millay, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, again, I'll go back to what I mentioned earlier. When I first volunteered at the Unitarian Fellowship in 2008, 90% of those accessing the services were Aboriginal. Again, with Salvation Army, it's a high barrier, and with the history in this community and elsewhere when it comes to church and the Indigenous people, I guess I'd have to disagree, John, with the consumers having a choice when it comes to that. And the Salvation Army this year, I believe they were running around 80 to 85% capacity throughout most of the winter. That was the numbers that was sent to me by Councillor Beswick not too long ago. So, I guess it boils down to ideologies. It doesn't have nothing to do with funding, and I look forward to when we have all the facilities up and running in this community and we're not reliant on having a winter shelter or an extreme shelter.
I spoke with Kevin Griffiths, who was the coordinator of the Unitarian Fellowship shelter over the winter this year. He said that he's proud of the work that he and others did to shelter homeless people during this past year. He declined the opportunity to speak on the program today, but he indicated that plans for next year are underway. However, he didn't give me any details about those plans. I'd like to ask each of the two of you, what do you think will happen next year with the winter shelter arrangements in Nanaimo? John, can we begin with you?
Sure. Certainly BC Housing will continue to fund the extreme weather shelter component. There's been no indication that they're going to cease and desist doing that. So I can say with a great deal of confidence that that will happen next year, the extreme weather shelter. The City of Nanaimo funds the remaining nights that aren't designated as extreme, and this year we spent close to $40,000 doing that. So if we expect to do that again next year and the Unitarian Church is open to that, then the task that lies before us is coming up with the funding to do that. And my commitment would be to find that funding come heck or high water, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's really probably the main issue facing us. If that's what we want to do next year, is we're going to have to come up with the financial resources to enable the church to do it.
And Wallace Millay, what do you think will happen with winter shelter arrangements in the coming months and next year?
Well, I'm hoping we find out in the near future exactly what the decision is going to be on that. And I'm hoping that the Unitarian Fellowship will do as they did this year and have it open for next winter. I would definitely jump on board helping support John or anybody else that's trying to raise funds for that. But I'd also turn around and say if BC Housing can give money to Vancouver for four winter shelters last winter, 2012, 2013, then I don't, for 24/7, I don't see why we cannot approach them and try and see if we can't get some more funding from BC Housing.
Thanks to both of you for taking the time to come and join us. It was much appreciated.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you very much, Kevin.
Wallace Millay is a social justice activist from Nanaimo. John Horn is the City of Nanaimo's social planner. And Gord Fuller is a Nanaimo-based community activist and board member at the 710 Club.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.